And that sound means it's time for another round of Talking Books. Thursday this week instead of Wednesday with Susan Brown, the director of the Chapel Hill Public Library, who joins us now here in the studio. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good.
You know what we... Oh, sorry, what?
No. Go for it. No.
You know what we did this week with the show? We sprang forward.
Ah.
See what we did?
I like that.
We moved a day forward and then an hour back.
That was the plan all along, yeah.
And that meant that just now I'm sitting in my office working on very important library matters. And you could ask my team, the sound carries forth from my office. Holy snickerdoodles! I'm supposed to be on the radio! And then there's a bustle of papers flying everywhere. I dash out the door.
Everyone
and now
going,
I'm here. We're not that kind of a library.
It's
pretty great, though. So I'm sorry that I couldn't be here yesterday.
No, it's
all
good.
I'm so glad to be here today.
Absolutely.
And what were you going to say, friend?
I was going to say, who do you have winning the national championship this year?
So this is great.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So we do brackets at CHPL. And last year... I think the first year, a couple years ago, I chose them on like team colors.
Okay.
And then last year, I chose them on team names I like saying.
Yes.
Gonzaga.
Oh,
Villanova.
So like the school names. Okay.
Yes, Villanova. Oh, yeah. One year I did it by mascots. Yes.
Yeah.
Like who would win? Wildcats
would
versus
win between,
Panthers or something.
Like the Friars versus the Banana Slugs. Yes.
Yes. The Billikens. I'm always confused about who they would beat or who would perish or whatever.
They would probably fight to a draw with the Hokies.
Hey, right now.
I know.
Team colors, team mascots.
Okay.
Last year, based on the how I liked
sound
pronouncing
the
team name. And then this year, I was like, okay, because as I think I've told you, basketball fever has swept through the Brown house. My boys are into it. So I was like, okay, this year I'm getting serious. I'm seriously going to do my bracket. So I start on the, round of 64, and then I get into it. And then I quickly realize, I was like, wait a minute. This could end up in the greatest Final Four ever. So I've simply chosen on what I believe would be the greatest Final Four ever.
Okay.
And that would be UVA... Well, basically, the Final Four teams would be UVA, Duke, UNC, and Tech.
Okay.
And UNC and Tech would be in the championship, and Tech would win.
Okay.
So that's who I have winning.
Good
and
luck.
Here's the great thing. So our dear neighbors across the street.
You're talking Virginia Tech there.
Virginia Tech.
To clarify.
Not Texas Tech. Not Georgia Tech. None
Deb
of those.
Deb Stroman yesterday said Texas Tech was
going
to win it all. So everyone agrees on a Tech school randomly winning.
I've got Texas Tech going a pretty good way.
I've got
them
losing in the first round.
Really?
So someone's going to be really wrong.
So
probably
I'll just
may.
Tell you this. Our dear neighbors across the street, their kids are close in age to ours. Two girls. Hey, Tessa. Tessa's totally not listening, but I'm just going to give her a shout out. They're big UNC fans, but Tessa comes over to our house a lot and shoots basketball with us a lot. And so we were talking brackets going to school, and she said, I've got Virginia Tech and UNC in the championship.
Wow.
She's got UNC winning.
Okay.
So I'm just saying... Tessa and I,
me
and the third grader, we're calling this. We are calling this. That also speaks to the level of basketball expertise and knowledge.
Maybe.
So who do you have winning?
I had Virginia beating Michigan State, but then what's his name for Virginia went down with a broken wrist.
Right?
So I had to revise my whole bracket on that side, and I have Arizona going to the Final Four. And I don't think Arizona's beating UNC, so I've got Michigan State now beating UNC in the national championship.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
This is a rematch of 2009.
So how far do you have Virginia Tech going?
Oh, who does Virginia Tech play in the first round?
Oh, come now.
No. I legitimately don't
We play
remember.
Alabama tonight.
Oh, no, I've got Alabama winning that game.
Of course you do.
Yeah. Big time Alabama,
Yeah. It's going to be fun. And again, my kids are super into it. So, like, we watch the selection show and all of it.
Nice.
And I will tell you, at the library during March Madness, generally on the big screens, when we can, we put the games up.
Mm-hmm.
So don't worry. You can come to the library. Or,
cool.
We have good Wi-Fi. You can still come, take a kid to story time, and be on your phone in the corner with a cup of coffee watching all the scores.
So when you say you have the games up on the big screen, is that in the lobby area?
We've got a big screen in the lobby. We have one downstairs. And occasionally, it's kind of like back in my day when they would like roll the TV cart into the classroom.
Yeah.
We sometimes
that was my day,
just,
too.
Right? We sometimes just... find some screens and put things on them.
Okay.
So we will do our best to keep everybody informed, because that's what we do. We put information and knowledge out there, and at this time of year, everybody needs to know.
Yeah.
The information and knowledge about UNC and the tournament.
I remember the wheelie cart with the old TV in my high school, and my high school only had a couple of those to go. It was a big high school in Lansing with 1,800 students, and I think we only had two of those wheelie carts. So whenever they were in demand, it was a really, really big deal. So the only day that I remember of the wheelie cart TV was when the O.J. Simpson verdict was announced. Our English teacher, Miss Lynn, managed to secure one of the two wheelie cart TVs. We were downstairs in math class, and she was upstairs on the second floor, but everyone in math class took Miss Lynn for English either at the time or had. So she said, just come on up. So there were like 100 students crammed into this room.
Watching
that
it.
Was made for 30. And it only took 5 minutes. It's like, what's the verdict? Not guilty. And we were like, okay. And we all just turned around and walked back to class.
Right.
So this is the most anticlimactic.
I remember the wheelie cart for the Challenger. I remember
they
brought those in. Mm-hmm. So we were all, that's probably my most distinct memory of that one. And then there were still some wheelie carts when I was in college. And I remember somebody wheeling it in for the compound in Texas. Waco.
Yeah.
So the world is changing now. You can just watch it on your phone.
Yeah.
Where have all the wheelie carts gone?
Trying to lecture. Ooh,
right.
That's a good question. There's like this wheelie cart graveyard somewhere
with miles and miles of them.
Yeah.
That was the technical term for them.
Yeah.
I once tried to turn one at a former job into a standing desk, and it just didn't work out because it just kept rolling.
It just roll around.
It didn't have the locks on it. It was not good.
No, it was not good. All right, what are we talking about today?
Irish fiction.
Ooh.
Oh, that was terrible.
Yeah.
Can you?
It's fine. We'll edit out the cultural appropriation in post.
You always say that and then you don't.
Because St. Patrick's Day is coming up,
yes,
right?
Can you yes. Can you do an Irish accent?
Absolutely not.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't even try?
I've got to do improv, so you have
right.
to do a whole bunch of different accents. And the way to do a bad Irish accent on the fly is to start by saying, oi, toy, 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 and then, like, go from there. It works. It
toy.
And the accent is still terrible. No, absolutely not.
Give me some. Oh, come on.
No.
No.
I've done enough damage in the last 15 seconds. Thank you very much.
Toy. That's actually what I said.
It's like a leprechaun clearing his throat, basically.
Well, that's what I said, actually, when I realized that I had to be on the radio.
Yeah.
I said, oi, toy. I'm supposed to be on the radio right now. And then I dashed out of my office. No, that's not what happened. So anyway, St. Patrick's Day is coming.
So in honor of the Irish culture.
Yes, in honor of the Irish culture. We thought we'd talk about Irish writers,
books, yeah.
Irish books.
Yeah.
So,
all
you
right.
go first.
Okay, cool. First one that came to mind, not fiction, but nonfiction. I actually just read the complete works of Frank McCourt not long ago, like within the last year. There's Tiz, there's Teacher Man, but the first one is Angela's Ashes, and that's the classic. That's the one that everyone should read.
Yes.
But he had a fascinating life, and he was... And it's not a life of... incredibly great, like going to space and coming back kind of things, but just like growing up in Ireland and moving to the U.S. and becoming a teacher and spending your career teaching in New York City, and then eventually like sitting down and writing about it and having just this great storytelling acumen and just having a really interesting life to begin with, even though it's not like the sort of life that makes the national news or that makes you a big celebrity. Like, it's still a fascinating life, and the way he tells it is just so cool.
He's great.
He is,
makes
yeah.
me want to go back and, like, So I read Angela's Ashes a couple mm-hmm. times, and then Tiz, but what's the other one?
Teacher Man.
That's the one that I've never read.
That's a good one. I think that one's better than Tiz. Angela's Ashes is the best, but Teacher Man is fun because it's him navigating through the world of being a public school teacher and like moving from job to job
right.
and classroom to classroom and dealing with different kids. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So the first one I thought of when thinking about Irish writers was one of my favorites, and I think he's underread. He's perhaps very read in the sort of literary fiction world, but I think that he should be more widely read here, and his name is William Trevor. Mm-hmm. So William Trevor, I discovered him, and the book that I'm going to recommend is the book that I discovered him with, which is called The Story of Lucy Gault, and it's a very short novel, and it's the story of, well, a girl named Lucy Gault, and it's divided into three sections. There's her childhood, her middle age, and her later life, and it's set in the 20s in Ireland, and her family needs to leave their home. And she doesn't want to leave, and she hides in the woods. And so her parents have to leave, and she's gone. And they believe that she drowned in the sea because their home is by the sea, when in fact she lives on. And the whole story is about grief, remembrance, what you wish for, Ireland in the 20s and 30s, family, sagas, all of that. But it's a very short book. So I read this book when it came out. I randomly read it. I think it came out in the early 2000s. And I wanted to learn more. And he's one of those writers that outside of the U.S., everyone knows. He's won every prize out there, and he's wonderful. So he's very lauded. He's won the Whitbread and the Penn and all of those. Most of his books are fairly short, and they're just beautiful, beautiful books. So William Trevor, I started him with the story of Lucy Gault. I would recommend almost any of his, especially some of his earlier ones. There's one called The Old Boys, which is a wonderful book. So nice. William Trevor is my first recommended Irish writer.
I'm going to go standard for my next one. And I know I've recommended this one before, but it's worth recommending again. James Joyce's short story, The Dead, which is the last one at the end of Dubliners, which is a fine short story collection, but The Dead is the one that everyone has to read. And the last paragraph about snow falling all over Ireland and the main character looking out the window is just such a beautiful last paragraph. And it just sort of captures the whole zeitgeist of Irish culture at the time. If for no other reason than later on we look back at Irish culture in the early 20th century and we just associate it with James Joyce no matter what. So
right.
When you get to that level where you're just defining it to begin with.
So have you read a lot of Joyce?
I've read most of Dubliners, Portrait of the Artist, and I'll say most of Ulysses.
Okay.
I made it from start to finish, but there were some chapters and I was like, oh, this is too dense. I'm going to skim over the rest of this.
So I wish that I could say that I've read more Joyce. I think I read Portrait of the Artist. I've read
Portrait
some
of the Artist
Dubliners.
Is good, yeah.
But I think Joyce is one of those writers who, if you don't read him by a certain point in your life, then you're like, well, for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If, I was going to read him, it would be in my 20s, maybe my early 30s when I still to be challenged.
Right.
Now I'm like, whew, that's work. Sorry.
Now I just want to read for fun. Yeah.
So speaking of reading for fun, my next author that I want to recommend is an Irish author who some people know by the name of John Banville, who, like William Trevor, is a very literary author, has won many, many prestigious prizes. But he writes under a pen name, a wonderful crime series, and the pen name is Benjamin Black, which is a great name for
That's
a crime
awesome
writer.
Name, yeah.
And the series that he writes features, it's called the Quirk series. So Quirk is also a wonderful name for a main character. And Quirk is a pathologist. And these all take place in 1950s and 1960s in Dublin. So they're literary crime fiction, not with a cop or a lawyer or a detective as a main character, but with a medical pathologist. And they're all wonderful. So if you liked, if you like the Henning Mankell Scandinavian noir stuff, if you like J.K. Rowling series that she wrote, the crime fiction series she wrote
under
a pen name, if you like those, you would definitely like these. So the pen name that he writes under is Benjamin Black. The first book is Christine Falls, which is fabulous. But the whole series, there's 7 or 8 books in the series. He's still writing them. You get a taste of Dublin in the 50s and 60s. You get the whole crime fiction through medical forensic pathology and a great main character. He's kind of this snarky, surly, doesn't really care what anybody thinks about him or what he says to anybody. They're fabulous books.
Nice.
There
awesome.
You go.
Speaking of snarky and don't care what anyone thinks, my last recommendation, I'm just going to be really generic with it, anything by Oscar Wilde.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
There you go. So now he's one who doesn't always feel like work, right?
Right. Yeah, super fun.
Somebody you should read and is enjoyable.
Yeah.
I mean, not that now I'm going to dig myself a hole, but.
No, I think that's fine.
You know what I mean?
No, I've read Ulysses. Wild is enjoyable. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Ulysses is great. Wild is enjoyable.
It's not fun.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
That's great. It's not great.
There's a difference between being great and being fun. There's also a difference between being great and being good. Like, There are great novels and there are great books, and I think there's a difference.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
Just like there are great movies and there are great films, and they're not the same thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Sidebar. And then I have one more author to recommend. You, because of the life of luxury that you lead, often get to go to the movies in the middle of the day.
Yeah. Summer spots right there.
I know,
it's
right?
Great.
So I believe this is out. Red Sparrow, the movie.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it's out yet.
With
I don't
Jennifer
know if
Lawrence,
I'll see it. Yes. But I had a case of insomnia this past week. I was like, I got to find a book to read. I loaded it on my Kindle. Timmeraroo, Timmeraree. What's the Irish thing that I'm supposed to say?
Toy, toy, toy.
What a great book. I'm going to use toy, 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 toy as
an
exclamation.
I think in that particular case, Timmeraroo, Timmeraree is a much more accurate.
Holy guacamole. I don't know what to say. I'll just tell you, Red Sparrow did not solve my insomnia. I was like, I must read more. Like, my eyelids were trying to close. It's a really, really good spy novel.
Because the movie is just getting air reviews.
The book
but...
is, like, just,
okay.
if, like, you want a page-turning spy thriller that really makes you think, it's so good. But now let me pivot back to the Irish writers.
Yes, yes, yes.
So far, everyone we have recommended is a dude.
As a dude,
right?
Yes.
So I'm going to end with a lass.
All right.
lads and lasses, sorry. So I would highly recommend Emma Donoghue. So people know her because she wrote Room, which was a big, big book,
that
and
was
it was
a good
turned
movie.
Into a movie. Yeah. And it was a wonderful book. She's had two books after that, one called Frog Music and one called The Wonder. But I just want to recommend all of her books, especially some of her earlier ones. And one of hers that I really, really liked was called, hang on, there was one... The Woman Who Gave Birth to Rabbits was just a great title and a really good book. She wrote one called Slammerkin, which is historical fiction. And then she wrote another one that's also historical fiction called The Sealed Letter. And both the Sealed Letter is based on an actual scandal in Britain in the mid-1800s. Wonderful writer. So people know her through Room, which is very modern, very of the now. I would recommend both The Sealed Letter and Slammerkin, and really any of her books, but those are both historical fiction done in a very literary and thoughtful and different way. So Emma Donoghue, all of her books, but especially those two.
Sounds good. That's
there you have
books
it.
For this week. Susan Brown, thank you so much.
See you next week.